Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, today my guests are Dr. Donna Hicks, who's going to talk about something we all want but don't often talk about, and that is dignity. Don't you always want to be treated with dignity? And I bet there are times when you're not. Well, Dr. Hicks shows that by incorporating dignity into everyday life, we can open up greater peace within ourselves and help to create a safer, more humane world. Later, we'll be joined by air traffic analyst Chris Hills, who's going to provide some tips for stress-free traveling, and he'll share the latest on TSA security procedures because they're constantly changing. I know every time I travel, something new's come up and I get something else confiscated from me. And we'll end today with a little Thanksgiving fun, I'm going to play with Eric Ryder, our in-studio producer here. Are you looking forward to that, Eric?
I am definitely looking forward to it, but I'm going to try and keep my dignity during it.
I hope you will.
Just like all those travelers out there are going to try and keep their dignity when they go through security.
There you go. And I will try and not to violate your dignity while we're playing that game.
I appreciate it.
Well, let me welcome Dr. Donna Hicks. She is a psychologist and associate at the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs at Harvard University. And in addition to teaching conflict resolution at Harvard, Clark, and Columbia universities, Dr. Hicks has spent nearly two decades in the field of international conflict resolution. She's facilitated many dialogues between communities in serious conflict, working with people in the Middle East, Sri Lanka, Colombia, Cuba, and Northern Ireland. And in addition, Dr. Hicks acts as a consultant with corporations and organizations. She has a dignity model, and she shows them how it applies to everyday business and relational situations as well. She was once a consultant to the BBC, where she co-facilitated a television series, Facing the Truth, with Archbishop Desmond Tutu. In fact, Archbishop Tutu wrote the foreword to Dr. Donna Hicks' new book, and that is called Dignity, the Essential Role It Plays in Resolving Conflict. Donna Hicks, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Vicki.
Well, I want to start. Normally, I start off with a guest background, but I'm going to dive straight into this, and then we'll talk about your background a little later because they do all tie in here, obviously. You say that dignity is the motivating force behind all human interaction. It's the desire to be treated well. It's an unspoken human yearning that's at the heart of all conflicts. Yet no one is paying attention to it. No one is talking about it. Tell me about that.
Well, I've been, as you said in my intro, I've been working in the field of conflict, Vicki, for almost 20 years now, conflict resolution, that is. And it didn't matter where I was in the world doing these dialogues between warring parties. It just didn't matter whether it was the Middle East or Asia or South America. The fact was that in every broken relationship, there were underlying issues where people felt that their dignity was violated, but nobody ever talked about the fact that that was what was really going on that was keeping the parties apart. These emotional issues are something nobody really feels comfortable talking about, but honestly, until they were able to be put on the table and discussed in using the language of dignity, that was my big insight, was that people won't talk about emotional wounds, but they will talk about having their dignity violated. So I just created this language of dignity to talk about all of those unspoken, you know, injuries that we all of us who had a breakdown in a relationship have felt when someone has mistreated us. So that's basically how it started.
Right. And Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines dignity as the quality or state of being worthy, honored, or esteemed. How do you define it for the purposes of the book, Donna?
Very simply, Vicki, my definition is simply that our dignity is our sense of our value and our worth, self-worth. And it really doesn't have to be any more complicated than that, because one way of thinking about how simple it is when you see a little baby born, whether it's your child or someone who's close to you, you look at this precious little creature, and there is no question in your mind or anybody's mind whether that baby is valuable, right, or if that baby has worth. And I even go so far as to say, well, not only is that little creature valuable, but it's invaluable, it's priceless, and it's irreplaceable. So when we, if you really have a hard time thinking about what our dignity is, just think of the last baby that you've seen and how precious that thing is. And for some odd reason, what happens to us when we start growing up is we lose touch with the fact of that inherent, you know, inherent value and that pricelessness of human beings. So I'm just kind of reminding people, you know, in my book, one of the things that I've done is just reminded people we all have this. We're all born with this incredible sense of value and worth. We just have to start acting like it again.
Yes. Now, you begin your book with, I thought, what was a very interesting story. You're in Latin America. You're talking to military leaders. You're talking to political leaders. And the president of one country comes up to you at the end, and he's been very unapproachable, very resistant to your process, your conflict resolution process. But he comes up to you at the end of the session, and he says he thanks you for bringing these people together and helping them. And then he also adds, and I thank you, I think you've saved my marriage too. So tell us a little bit about that story.
I'll tell you, that was just a wonderful moment because, you know, in that session when we were working with these generals, all of the top leaders of the country, and the president was there, as you said, and there were members of the Ministry of Defense who they were having this big squabble with. And, I mean, you could tell when I was asked to come and do this work with them, you can tell they didn't want any part of this. They, you know, especially these guys who were, you know, military men, they didn't want to be talking about, you know, all these emotional issues. But the moment actually they heard that I was going to be talking about dignity, everybody's eyes sort of, you know, perked. They perked up and they thought, well, you know, I think we can do this. By the end of those 2 days, there wasn't one person in that session who didn't feel that this dignity work completely turned their thinking around about how to be in relationships with other people. And really, the deeper questions that I got from these folks was all about, you know, how can I do this with my kids? How can I treat my kids better? How can I, you know, improve my relationship with my family, my wife, my, you know, and my coworkers? And it was like a light bulb went off in their heads. But, you know, we need the language to talk about it. And I think that was really my big contribution, is giving us all language and a way to talk about it with one another so that it doesn't feel so, you know, some people call it touchy-feely, right?
Right, right. Well, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about, you know, how we deal with unspoken issues, because they typically are the most difficult to deal with, and how we can help turn things around in our own difficult relationships. My guest in this segment is Dr. Donna Hicks, and her new book is called Dignity, The Essential Role It Plays in Resolving Conflict. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Wise man looking in a blade of grass. Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicki at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772.
Coming up November 28th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, business consultant Tom Salinak on why the economy has little to do with business growth if you're doing the right things. We'll share what those things are. And Vicki will ask leading psychologist Jason Selk how to develop the mental toughness you need to take you to the next level. Join us at noon Pacific every Monday for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow Vicki on Twitter and Facebook at Vicki St. Clair.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Somebody got murdered on New Year's Eve. Somebody said dignity was the first to leave. I went into the city, went into the town, went into the land of the midnight sun.
And welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Dr. Donna Hicks about her new book, Dignity, the Essential Role It Plays in Resolving Conflict. And as I said at the top of the hour, Dr. Donna Hicks is involved in resolving international conflict. She's done this fantastic new work that just cuts right across the board. You were telling me during the break, Donna, how many people are contacting you from all walks of life and all kinds of situations and telling you how this book has helped you. Help them, rather.
Yes, and no, it's so true that even though when I wrote this book, I intended to write it for a general audience, even though, as you pointed out, my work has mostly been in international conflict, but because I've gone into other areas like the corporate world and into the workplace and into different organizations, I found that this issue was just as prominent in our relationships in all aspects, and everybody that has called me, and as you said, everybody who has contacted me and said, you know, this has really helped me so much, I had no idea, and thank you for giving me the language to talk about this. And it just, you know, it just touches me, because I knew personally, not only from my own life and my professional life, that this is what I've been searching for and yearning for years and years and years. I didn't realize that it was true for everybody else as well. Everybody, and this is why I say it's the motivating factor behind all human interaction. Nobody wants to be treated as if they were inferior or less than, or, you know, just not being seen as a valuable human being. And it's just a call that we all are, you know, that we all have.
Right, right. So let's take a look, because we've got the holidays coming up. Always presents stressful situations for some people. A lot of the tension, I think, is around unspoken issues, and you talk about that in the book. There are issues that people just don't talk about, but the tension is there. How do we even begin to connect with people when we have this kind of situation? That's what I want to look at. And you have come up with what you call the 10 essential elements of dignity. And the first one actually is accepting identity. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that to us and what you mean by acceptance of identity.
Well, what I find, especially in my work, is that when people start judging one another, when you go into a relationship with someone, and let's say that person happens to be different, maybe a different race, a different religion, a different ethnic group, or whatever the difference is, people can just sort of automatically judge, and by doing that, they're basically judging that person's identity and saying, well, I'm better than they are, or there's something, you know, I don't really want to be in relationship with them because they are different from me. And boy, I'll tell you, Vicki, most of the conflicts that I get asked to resolve are really around these issues of identity, where people feel like they're being discriminated against or mistreated, whether it's men, you know, women with men, or different racial groups having, you know, differences and feeling dismissed. It's just, you know, our identity is so important to us. It's who we are. It's at the core of who we are. And if for some reason we're being dismissed simply because we're from a different religion or a different you know, race or a different ethnicity, or I mean, even people who have disabilities are often, you know, feel discriminated against.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I can attest to that, because every time my mother goes out, she gets upset about something, or would do if I let
right.
her.
Well, how many times do people who have disabilities, you know, they enter a situation, a public place, and there's no way for them to get into the building because they're in wheelchairs and they can't, you know, I mean, now there's laws, but still, it's that's sort of yeah. discrimination that people feel, and
right.
it's at the core of who they are. And
right.
so if you want to honor somebody's dignity, you treat them neither as inferior or superior to you. You just give them that equal sense of recognition of their value, no matter who they are.
Right. You know, one of the things that upsets my mother the most, because she is in a wheelchair, is when people ignore her and talk to me or whoever else is
yeah.
pushing her. So that is an infringement of dignity. One of the things you talked about, which I thought was kind of interesting, is you use the terms, the difference between I and me in the role
yeah.
of acceptance of identity. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, it's a very simple distinction again. I mean, there's I like to think of us as having two parts. One part is the what I call the me that is looking for our dignity on the outside. In other words, we say to ourselves, oh, if we're situated in our me, we say, I can't feel good about myself unless I get this new job, or if I get a raise, or, you know, if you're a student, they don't feel good unless they get an A on the paper. Whatever it is, there's always some external thing that's going to make them feel good about themselves. All right, so that's kind of me-driven behavior and
mm-hmm.
thinking. Now, on the other hand, there's the I. Now, the I recognizes that we are unworthy no matter what, no matter what we do. Just by virtue of having been born a human being, I know that I'm worthy. My worth is unconditional. I don't need praise. I don't need approval. I'm just really understanding in a very deep way that just by virtue of being a human being, I am valuable, I am worthy. But, you know, I just did a 3-day course at Columbia just this weekend, and the students in that course, and they're all graduate students and some continuing students, they were saying to me, you know, I feel like I've been living out of my me all my life. You know, I've been looking for approval, I've been looking for praise, I've been looking for this sense of my well-being from outside. And you know what happens is if that's the way where you're looking for your dignity, it's never going to be enough, because
right.
you always are searching for it on the outside of you. So your I is the part that wants to say, I am worthy no matter what. I am just, you know, I am worthy no matter what.
Right, right. And you call that false dignity when we're constantly searching outside of ourselves for
yes,
for approval there.
Well, because it really isn't recognizing our own inherent worth. It's saying, I have to do something in order to be worthy, as opposed to, I am worthy.
So you talk about switching the default setting, and instead of focusing on all the things that those we're in conflict with are doing to us, take a look at how we might be contributing, and probably are contributing, to the situation. What are some things we need to do there?
Well, you know, just think about the last time you've had a squabble with somebody. And, you know, it's easy to think about this in terms of people who are closest to you, like your family or your significant other, your husband, your wife, your partner. You know, because we're rarely, Vicki, an innocent victim in a troubled relationship.
Right, right. It takes two
but,
to
you know,
tango.
Yeah, it takes two to tango. But we have these instincts that tell us that somebody else is always in the wrong. And it's just our default setting. We have these default settings with us where we think, I'm always right, you know, that other person is wrong, and we don't like to look at our own behavior. We don't like to hold that mirror up and say, gee, I wonder what I might be doing to contribute to this bad relationship. We just don't, that's not our default setting. Our default setting is to say, look, and you know, I could tell you for 20, 30 minutes what went wrong with my relationship with my husband yesterday. He did this, he did that, he was, you know. So it's just a very interesting thing even to just think about, you know, when something goes wrong, might I have done something that contributed to this.
Right, right. And do I have false expectations around this relationship to begin with, I think is a key one that I look at too.
Yes.
You say that we all have blind spots, and that's very true. And you talk about a time when you were stunned because some friends told you about how you'd violated them. What could be a typical scenario? And use one of yours if you would explain the situation.
I'll tell you what happened. My husband and I have a place in Maine, and we invited some friends, and I was all set to have the perfect weekend for my friends. And I arranged the lunch dates. I arranged where we were going to dinner, what we were going to do, the places we were going to see. I just wanted it to be perfect for them. And what happened once, you know, the weekend started and everything was going just exactly the way I wanted. But at the end of the weekend, my friends said to me, "Donna, I know you had really good intentions, but we had absolutely no choice. No choices about what we wanted to do. You never even thought to ask us, do we want to go to this restaurant or that restaurant?" I was violating their dignity because I was controlling the whole situation and not giving them one single choice about what they wanted to do.
Mm.
So, and yet, it was from a good intention. But you know what? Our blind spots are like, you know that expression, the road to hell is paved with good intentions?
Right.
So, I just didn't have any sense that I was, not giving them. It didn't even occur to me. My motive was to give them the best time that they could possibly have.
Yeah, and I think that's often the case in many situations. It's just a case of misunderstanding, isn't it? And if it's a good job they talked to you, though, Donna, because those resentments would have built over time and maybe destroyed a relationship.
You're so absolutely right. These are very close friends, and I use this example because it's important to point out that with your close friends, we're not doing anybody any favors by not telling them the ways in which we think that they're violating us or upsetting us. It's not holding back and not speaking up. It doesn't do the relationship any good. The person who has the blind spot, like me in that situation, I would have just gone on maybe in the next, several visits that they had with us, I might have done exactly the same thing. So they were doing me a favor by telling me, giving me the feedback and saying, I know you were intended good, but the fact was it was difficult for us because half of the things you planned we didn't want to do.
Right, right. So once we have acknowledged our responsibility and we've taken a look at our part, it's one thing to acknowledge it. It's a whole other thing, I think, for people actually to take responsibility for that. What do we need to do to make sure we get off on the right track?
So when we actually violate somebody's dignity,
yes,
you mean?
Once we've acknowledged, once we've recognized what we've done, once we've acknowledged our own part in that.
Mm-hmm. So I think you just go to the person, you go to the person and say, "Look, I recognize now that I might have done something that was hurtful or harmful to you. I certainly didn't intend to do that. It wasn't my intention. But now that I think back about it and I reflect on it, I can see that I was, I was causing you harm by something I did." And I would even go so far, Vicki, as to say to them, I really invite you to please tell me, I want you to tell me in the future if there are any other ways in which I'm doing that because, I care for you. My mm-hmm. relationship with you is important. So please, you'd be helping me in the end if you were able to, give me that feedback because
right.
I don't want to be, our relationship is just too important.
Right. Now, a lot of people are not very good about accepting criticism. So
I know.
When they take feedback, they do need to look at it as feedback and not criticism per se.
Well, Vicki, there's a skill there involved because my friends happen to be very, very skilled people. Sometimes when you give someone feedback, you're giving it to them as a weapon because you were hurt by that person, right?
Right, right.
And the difference here is, my friend said to me, he said, Donna, "I'm going to give you some feedback about a very tiny part of who you are. The rest of you is lovely. I love all the rest of you, but this part can be really annoying, this little tiny part. So, you know, I mean, he gave me that feedback in the most loving ways. And but you have to watch your tone of voice, because it could easily, tone of voice has a very sharp edges at times. And if you're screaming that back to the somebody that, you know, this is what you're doing and you really hurt me and you really upset me, well, it's very hard for the person to take that in. You want to deflect it when it comes at you as a weapon.
Right.
So learning how to give the feedback in a way where people can hear it and can actually take it in and feel and respond to it and say, oh, gee, I just had no idea I was doing that. I'm really sorry.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've been in some very heated and very serious conflict resolution throughout your career. How do you deal with somebody, what's the best approach to deal with somebody who's very much in your face, just flies off the handle for no apparent reason? Obviously, there's a reason there somewhere, but it's very difficult sometimes to diffuse people like that, and it can really put a crunch in Thanksgiving dinner.
Right. Well, you know, I take a paradoxical approach to this, Vicki, because what I do, and this is so fresh in my mind because we just did exercises around this weekend when I taught this. What I do is the first thing that I try to do is calm the person down. So in other words, let's say somebody's screaming at you. I would say to the person, gosh, I can see you're really, really upset. Is there something, you know, we could do? Is there something I could do? Can we talk about this? So just the idea of having a person who is really, you know, going off and is upset about something, what he or she really wants is to be acknowledged for that upsetment.
Right.
And so if you were to instead, because most people just get turned off by a person like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would even walk the other way and maybe even just, you know, try to get out of the room.
I think that's why some people behave that way. They're trying to intimidate you into being quiet.
Exactly. No, I think that's right. So if you sort of stop them dead in their tracks and say, wow, I can see you're really angry. What happened? What happened that you got so angry? Did I say something? Did I do something? They're not expecting you to acknowledge their anger.
Mm. Now,
so I call that the surprise attack.
That sounds good. That sounds good. And then what about the converse of that? What about somebody who just clams up and doesn't want to talk, doesn't want to communicate, doesn't even think there is a problem? That can be equally difficult to deal
really
with.
That is really frustrating, too. That is really frustrating. And in a case like that, I would probably say something like, you know, I can see that you got awfully quiet. What is there something that happened that made you want to withdraw from this conversation? Or I'm concerned about you. That's the other thing I would preface it by saying. I'm concerned about you. You got very, very quiet, and I'm wondering if something happened that upset you.
Now, I want to tell you this because reading this book has changed my buzzword. Like, my buzzword for this year was respect. And if I'm in situations that are difficult or frustrating, or, you know, sometimes I think, what am I doing here? My buzzword to myself would be respect. And after reading this book, moving forward throughout next year, is going to be dignity.
Oh, good for you.
So I want to just ask you how writing this has made you see things differently about dignity and about relationships.
Yeah, well, about the dignity and respect, it's, to me, it's a really, really important distinction to make, because if you listen, I mean, this word dignity is on comes up in the media all the time now. I don't know why, but it's in the air. But when look what happened at Penn State, for example.
Mm.
You know, the dignity issues were coming up there all the time. But people put together the two words dignity and respect as if they were exactly the same thing. And the fact is, the way I think about it and conceptualize it is that they're quite different. So dignity, in my mind, is something that we all deserve. It's sort of the baseline of the way we should treat one another as human beings. And respect, on the other hand, is something I believe is earned. So if I say, wow, I really respect that person, I'm thinking to myself, I want to be like him, or I want to be like her. I admire that behavior so much. I wish I could be like that. But dignity is really And we're so not even anywhere near this, Vicki. This is the scary part. Dignity is something, it should be the baseline of the way we treat everybody. You see?
Yeah, and I do.
Yeah, and I think
I was going to say that I think that's a really important differentiation there, Donna. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and because I think people are, when they say respect, they really mean I want to be treated with dignity.
Mm.
I want to be seen as somebody worthy, as somebody valuable, and, you know, I want to be seen as if, looked at as if I matter, that, you know, who I am, I deserve just to be treated well. Now, of course, here's another distinction that comes out of that, Vicki. One is that we all deserve to be treated with dignity. That is our baseline. But then there are certain times when our behavior isn't dignified, right?
Right, right.
And we maybe do something that really is harmful and hurtful. Well, we certainly wouldn't want to respect that, right?
Right.
So that's another way of thinking about this difference between dignity and respect. Our behavior is open to criticism. And I think people can say, wow, she behaved really badly. But that's different from saying she's a bad person.
Mm. Well, I think your work is amazing. I mean, just the fact that you get out there and try and resolve these international conflicts and then have taken that and put it into such a readable book that we can literally use in our workplace, in our family, in our personal relationships. You say, we're almost at the end of our segment now, you say every day you remind yourself that we can do better and we can do it with dignity. And you say this is imperative for the future of our culture. Final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with, Donna?
Well, I think that's really the key to it, what you just said, Vicki, that, you know, we all are born with this desire for dignity. We all want to be treated this way. But the fact is we all don't know how to do it necessarily. And I think what I've offered to people in this book is very clear examples of what does it look like to actually live my life in a way where I am extending dignity, honoring people's dignity all the time. We do have to learn it. It doesn't come naturally.
Right, right.
So I think that's the message. Just educate ourselves about this. Just because, you know, it really doesn't take all that much once you have it in your mind, once you have an awareness of it, and then you start practicing it. And honestly, as you said, I have good days and I have bad days. Some days I feel really proud of myself. So this is not anything you learn once and it's going to be over. You have to just keep reminding yourself two things. Number one, I'm a valuable human being and I deserve to be treated well and treat myself well. And so is everybody else out there in the world.
Excellent. Great thought to leave our segment on. Donna Hicks, thank you so much for being with us. Your website is drdonnahicks.com, correct?
Yes, small dr, drdonnahicks.com, right.
Okay, and I know you have a blog up there that addresses some questions, and this is a really great book. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it, and you're most welcome, Vicki.
And again, my guest, Dr. Donna Hicks, her website, drdonnahicks.com, and the book, Dignity, The Essential Role It Plays in Resolving Conflict. Great read. Some really great information in there. And please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Orbit's air traffic analyst, Chris Hills. He's going to share some stress-free travel tips with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, in this segment, we're joined by Chris Hills, air traffic analyst. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I guess this is going to be a busy time of year for you, right?
Yes, it is. Busy for me and busy for anybody else who's going to be traveling over the Thanksgiving holiday.
So what are the predictions this year? I seem to remember maybe it was last year that the travel was down. I hear that we're expecting it to be up again this year. Is that right?
That's actually correct. AAA is estimating about 42.5 million people to be traveling over this Thanksgiving weekend. That's a 4% increase over Thanksgiving of last year.
That's a lot of people.
Yes, that is quite a few people. They're even expecting about 3.4 million people to be traveling by air alone.
Wow. So if we're traveling by air, what do you predict are going to be the busiest airports?
The busiest airports are definitely going to be Los Angeles, Chicago O'Hare, and Orlando. Seattle-Tacoma even comes in at number 10. It beats out airports like Atlanta and Dallas-Fort Worth as busy this weekend.
Wow, that's pretty sick. I'm glad I'm not flying out this weekend. But let's talk about some tips we can try and make our travel a little easier for us. You know, it hasn't been much fun since 9/11. And it seems like, you know, I travel quite a bit, usually on international long-haul flights. And it seems every time I travel, things have changed a little bit, and I find myself having to go through all that fine print on my tickets. Let's talk about ways we can save time, for example, checking in ahead of time. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
That actually is our number one tip that we give out is, before you even go to the airport, check in online and print your boarding pass from home. That'll save you a line that you have to stand in at the airport. The other thing we like to tell people is to arrive early, at least 2 hours for domestic flights and 3 hours for international flights. This is going to be a very busy travel weekend, so you might even want to arrive a little bit earlier if the airport you're going to is pretty busy.
Right. And there are ways that we can amuse ourselves while we're at the airport. I mean, I'm one of those people who likes to get there early and then I can relax. I think there's nothing worse than like stressing out, am I going to get there on time? And then what kind of line am I going to meet? Let's talk about being prepared for security, Chris. What are the latest TSA policy guidelines? It seems like every time I go, they've changed.
Well, actually, there is one change this year that is over last year, and that's if you're traveling with children under 12 years old, they do not have to remove their shoes before going through security. The other rules still are in place, the 3-1-1 rule for your liquids and gels. They all must be in those little 3-ounce containers and 1-quart clear plastic bags and 1 bag per passenger. You're going to still have to remove your shoes if you're over 12 years old, so wear shoes that are easy to slip on and off. And also remember, if you're carrying a laptop with you, that's got to come out of your suitcase and into a separate bin.
Yeah. Now, airports are different, I find, because when I was in New York, they didn't want me to get my laptop out. England never used to want me to get my laptop out. They could see through the scanners. Why so many different rules? It is confusing for people, I think.
It is a little confusing sometimes because, you know, like you said, some airports have you do the things that other airports don't, especially when you're traveling internationally. But here in the United States, the TSA does attempt to have a standard across the board with all the different airports. And so even if they don't ask you to take out your laptop, it's still probably a pretty good idea to do that because most TSA security checkpoints will have you do that.
Right. So just repeat the bit on the liquid, that we can only take so much liquid on us, because I remember once losing some very expensive lotion that I had in my back, and I don't want to do that again.
Yeah, it's called the 3-1-1 rule. All passengers must have all their liquids and aerosols, I mean everything, if you're going to carry it on the flight with you, in 3-ounce containers, 3 ounces or less. Mm. It can't be an 8-ounce container with only 3 ounces of liquid. It has to be a 3-ounce container or less. And all those containers must fit in a 1-quart clear plastic bag so the TSA can look through it. And only one one bag is allowed per person.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I remember the times when I used to go buy nice vanity bags, and now it's Ziploc sandwich bags for all that stuff.
But those are pretty common now.
You say use technology to get real-time information on flights before leaving the airport, and I can attest to this. I do this every single time I travel, except the last time I went to England, and I just didn't do it. I drove a 140-mile round trip to put my dog at camp. Get back home, there are 12 messages from my family saying England is snowed in, all flights have been cancelled. So I had to drive another 140-mile round trip to pick up my dog that day because I couldn't fly out for another 5 days. So tell us who we need to call, what we need to do to find out if our flight's on time and everything's going according to schedule.
Well, that's a very good point. Is you should always check your flight status before leaving for the airport, because things do change quite a bit. You can log on to Orbitz.com to check your status, or you can log on to your airline's website. When dealing with weather, it's very important also that a lot of people don't realize this, but check the weather at your arrival point. Because if you have some pretty bad weather over there, you're almost guaranteed some delays or cancellations. The Wednesday will probably be one of the busiest travel days. And the weather across the nation is looking pretty good, except for a couple of trouble spots. The Northeast, you know, the New York metro area, Washington, D.C., they're expecting some rain and low clouds. So you can see delays and cancellations there. Seattle is also expecting some rain on Wednesday, but the SeaTac does very, very well with rain and low clouds. So I'm not expecting too much of a gridlock there.
Right. We'd better do well with it. We have such a lot of it. And then Sunday is predicted to be the busiest day of the holiday. You know, how can we, especially when people are traveling with kids, I think it can get very stressful for people. What are your recommendations about traveling on the busiest day of the year?
Well, I've talked to parents over the past year and tried to get some of the tips from them with what they do when they travel with young kids. The one I hear most often is try to schedule the flight around your child's nap time, so there's more of a chance for them to be sleeping on the plane. A lot of times kids are too excited to sleep when they're on the flight, so bring plenty of stuff to keep them engaged, plenty of activities. I've seen kids playing iPads and iPhones a lot nowadays. And the other thing is when you are, because when you're traveling with kids, you always have a lot of stuff that you're traveling with. But if you're checking bags, make sure you stay under the 50-pound weight limit for the airlines, or else you'll be hit with some hefty fees.
Yeah. Interesting. I just want to go back to something you mentioned. You know, if we want to check our flight time in real time, you can look at it on Orbitz.com, even if we didn't book through you. Is that correct?
Absolutely right. You can check your flight status on Orbitz.com, even if you didn't book through us.
Okay. And I wanted to bring that up, Chris, because that happened to me when I was trying to get this last flight sorted out. I could not get onto British Air. They were inundated. The server couldn't cope. And so I couldn't check it online. So that's a very good thing to know, that I can check it on Orbitz.com if I need to.
Yeah, we have listings for pretty much all the airlines that are out there. And we have a specialty website called updates.orbitz.com, where you can get the latest weather, air traffic, and travel information for around your airport and your flight.
Perfect. So any other final thoughts before we leave you today?
That everybody should be aware that it's going to be a very busy travel holiday. Flights are going to be full. Airports are going to be full. So make sure you plan a little extra time when you do travel this weekend.
Yeah, take your snacks and take your drinks as well.
Exactly.
Well, Chris Hills, thanks so much for being with us today. I know you're going to have a very busy week.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us. And please stay with us. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a little Thanksgiving fun with you. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Are you going on Thanksgiving Day to those family celebrations? Passing on knowledge down through the years at the gathering.
crossing of generations. Every year it's the same routine.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws Foster Care Volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
If you want to reach a large audience of like-minded people, people with integrity, people who strive to live well and live strong, let Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair shine a spotlight on your message. Tell us about your business, product, service, or event, and we'll help you craft your message and promote your good work. Email Vicki at conversationslive.net or call 425-269-4772. That's 425-269-4772.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
So she runs for the great man. She'll spend hours on a bus, but she reaches town for
make me want to start singing, Eric. Well, we're going to have a little fun in the last segment of today. We're going to have a little quiz that I've prepared for Mr. Eric Ryder.
All right. Do I win a turkey if I get them right?
Well, you just don't have to wear a turkey outfit if you get them wrong.
Okay. Sounds good.
How about that? All right. I got loads of questions here, so let's see how many we can get through. It's estimated that Americans will eat around 46 million turkeys this month. Do you know what percentage of Americans eat turkey or say they eat turkey?
Well, everybody eats turkey. I got to imagine it's like 95%. Well, now, of course, there's the vegetarians and the vegans. So I'm going to go ahead and reduce that number. Let's say 90%.
That's quite high. It was about 88%. I was kind of surprised on that because we do have a lot of vegetarians and vegans. But I think I do know vegetarians.
So 88%?
Yeah, I do know.
So I was close, right?
I do know vegetarians and vegans who make an exception on Thanksgiving Day. So that's kind of interesting. Of those 46 plus million turkeys that we're going to eat this month, do you know what percentage of those are artificially inseminated?
You know, it's
just so you can have this visual in your mind when you're serving turkey on Thanksgiving Day.
I feel weird that I actually know this.
Okay.
But I heard a story not that long ago about this. And apparently that nearly all the turkeys in America are artificially inseminated because of the breed. And they breed them for these large breasts, which means that they have a hard time doing it the natural way.
You're absolutely correct. That's just the answer I was going to give. We plump them up and make them fat because everybody likes the breast because they can get more gravy on it.
Personally, I'm a dark meat person.
Well, okay. We won't blame you for plumping up the breast then. True or false, turkeys are slow-moving birds that do not or cannot fly.
Well, I believe in the wild they can fly, but when they're domesticated, they have trouble flying again because of the breeding things.
Okay,
and
okay.
I think they also clip their wings like they do with chickens, right?
Yeah, they debeak them and clip them and do all kinds of horrible things to them. But you're absolutely right. They can fly in the wild. They can reach up to 20 to 25 miles an hour on the ground. And they can fly around 55 miles an hour. Could you imagine a turkey flying at you at 50 miles an hour? Apart from the one that somebody throws across the table because they've had a conflict.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that.
True or false on this? Turkey contains an amino acid that makes you sleepy.
I think that's true.
It is true, but it's interesting that they can't attribute the tryptophan, which is the amino acid.
Yeah, that's what we've always been told.
Yeah, well, the New York Times did an interesting article on this, and they can't actually attribute the tryptophan to us feeling sleepy. It's more likely that we've eaten too much, and some people have included alcohol into the mixture.
Right.
And, you know, we get full and sleepy. We've had this high rush of food. And this was kind of interesting that tryptophan only helps you in the first stage of sleep, but in later stages of sleep, it actually can wake you up and stop you sleeping. I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that.
Huh.
Do you know which... okay, let's see if this is true or false. Wisconsin is the top turkey-producing state.
That's a tough one. I'm going to say false.
It is absolutely false. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, Minnesota is the top turkey-producing state.
Woo-hoo!
And they had a planned production total of 46.5 million in 2011. And in fact, nearly two-thirds of the 248 million turkeys that are raised in the U.S., 248 million a year raised in the U.S., come from only six states: Minnesota, North Carolina, Arkansas, Missouri, Virginia, and Indiana.
Wow.
Now, more about turkey than you ever wanted to know.
True enough. I'm just gobbling up these fun facts, so this will be great Thanksgiving Day trivia to share with the friends and family.
So the average weight of a turkey purchased for Thanksgiving in America is what?
That's another tough one. I'm going to say 20 pounds.
It's actually 15. I was kind of surprised. Cause
I got one wrong, so I had to play that.
Oh, I'm surprised you haven't got a turkey gobbling sound there. I meant to ask you for that. I forgot. So, yeah, it's actually 15 pounds, and I was surprised how low that was. Mm. Having been to several dinners where you can barely get the thing in or out of the oven. True or false, Washington, Oregon, and California are the major pumpkin-growing states.
Washington, Oregon, California. I think that's true.
False.
The
major pumpkin growing states are Illinois, California, Pennsylvania, and New York.
Oh, well, California was in both.
You would have figured New York was in there, but there you go. And they produced, get this, 1.1 billion pounds of pumpkin in 2010. So they've predicted 1.5 billion pounds for this year. That's a lot of pumpkins. True or false, the sweet potato is most plentifully produced in Virginia.
False.
You're absolutely correct. It's produced in North Carolina, and they grew 972 million pounds in 2010. That's a lot of potatoes. And we're running out of time here. I want to make sure I get this one in, which was actually my last question. Vegans, true or false? Vegans have to be aware of hidden animal products in foods. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
They also have to be aware of them in drinks. Unlike some drinks, wine is considered suitable for vegans. It's considered a vegan drink. Come on. Yes, no.
True?
I
true?
Well, actually, it's false in most cases. That was really interesting. According to environmental writer Lindsay Blomberg, who's a vegan herself, she set about to find out what was actually put in her wine. Many wineries use animal products during the fining process. They use isinglass, which is derived from fish bladders, gelatin, which is derived from boiled animal skin, tendons, and ligaments, and egg whites. And if that's to put you off wine, I don't know what will.
Right.
But not all. There are producers out there who do produce vegan wine. And those are Bonnivore.com, Frey Vineyards, and there's a whole bunch of others on the web if you just look. I know we're running right out of time. I've got to go. Want to wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have a wonderful time. Hope you have I hope it's conflict-free. Let's put it in the affirmative there. Keep your dignity. Have a conflict-free turkey-filled day. And enjoy your wine. Don't let that stop you enjoying
or a glass of wine, too. Or tofurkey-filled day, yeah.
There we go, a tofurkey. And we'll be back next week with a great new show. Please do join us then. Thanks for being with us and listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Live well, live strong.